Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Now, as I look at this particular thing, I'm thinking in terms of when I was young and the fact that when we start looking at this first verse, my son, forget not my law. You know, this is a situation when we look at people, there's many people would use that. I don't know whether I've actually heard anyone use it, but in reality, it seems like it's somewhat similar. I know my father, for example, was saying, you got to listen to what I do. This is my house. You will do as I say. But he didn't quite go through with how he should have done these things. So we have to be careful when we look at a verse like this and say, okay, this says my sons are supposed to do exactly what I tell them to do. That's not what it's saying. What is important is God. What is important that they teach what God says. Because this is what Solomon was due to his sons. That's the important part. And throughout the Bible, there is examples of how people are to be taught the importance of doing things God's way. And so let's look at the previous, to get the context. And this is an important thing because it's so easy when you talk about context but then not use it. Because the second chapter of Proverbs, and this is where we're going to right now, is along that line. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou shalt incline thy ear unto wisdom and apply thy heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then thou shalt understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So you see, it's something you're supposed to do here. And this is what he's saying, because Solomon himself had done this. That you need to listen to what is being told you. You need to find out what things are being done and what you should be doing. You are to take the commands of God and put them into your heart and hold and hide them. The commandments with you. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's one of them. Okay. And there are many others. I shall not... I'm losing that. Keep the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not... steal. You know, all the things that there is, all these things that are important to remember. And if we're going to incline our ears unto wisdom and apply our heart to understanding, that means we're going to have to seek these things out. Number one, as James says, you know, if you lack wisdom, ask of God, who giveth up, you know, who will give it to you and will not upbraid you for asking. He will provide you with the wisdom that he knows is the right way of doing things. That's what we are to learn. That's what we are to seek out. What is the best way of doing things? What is God's way? After all, he created the heavens and the earth with wisdom. As a result, he knows exactly why everything should be done. And that why is a very important part. Matter of fact, when you're looking for information, for understanding, for wisdom, I'm thinking along the line, I know my mother was involved in a school newspaper when she was in high school. And it was a lesson she learned apparently very well because she passed it on to me. There are five, in writing a news item, there are five W's. She called them the five W's, which are very important. Who, what, why, and where. Maybe not get them in the correct order, but nevertheless, all these things are important. Find out these things. Search out these things. Now, we're talking about searching out things. We've got to take that into consideration to a certain extent. I'm reminded of the fact that in Ecclesiastes, that Solomon, in writing that one, mentions the fact that he sought out a folly to see what was in it and the other things which are wrong for us to do. He wanted to know why not. Well, that's the problem. It's not a matter of why not. It's a matter of when you're talking to God and talking about doing God things His way, you need to find out why you should not be, rather what you should do instead of being foolish, instead of being lazy, instead of doing all the kinds of things of which we get as we look at others and see how other people are doing it. Well, they're doing it, why can I do it? Well, there's a good reason why God says so. And why did God say so? Again, because His wisdom. He's telling us what we need to do. Because He is the one that designed everything. And so everything runs according to His commandments. As He told Israel, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of the mouth of God doth man live. That is a lesson well worth learning. It's important to see that. Anyway. So these are the things. What He was teaching His son was the commandments of God. And these are the things that was to ingrain into the heart. Keep your commandments. And we're talking about the heart. Let thine heart keep my commandments. That is talking about the desire to do what is right. That is what we should be doing. The desire to do what is right. Not saying, well, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. No, it's desiring to do what is right. When God says, this works best, you should desire to do what is best because you have fewer problems that way. Oh, because of the tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil exists, the fact that human beings have partaken of it, the fact that they have used that knowledge instead of the knowledge that comes from the tree of life. Yes, there's going to be problems. You're going to run across situations, and people are going to run across situations like Abel did, where his older brother was so concerned and so angry because God had recognized Abel's sacrifice and not his. He deserved to be considered the best because he was the oldest. He deserved special attention. It doesn't work that way. That's not God's way. God recognizes those who do what is right. And God Himself said, talking about to Cain, He said, in essence, that if he did the right things, then things would go well with him. But if not, then sin lieth at the door. You see, that's where Cain had a problem. Sin had kept him from offering the proper sacrifice. So if we listen to God, if we follow Him, if we search out through the Scripture to see, again, what is the wise way of doing things, then we will find ourselves living longer, having peace. It doesn't make any difference what's going around. We can be at peace when everybody around us are having all kinds of trouble. I dare say, now, this is just me saying this, but I kind of think it probably applies in the case of Noah. And that's the fact that he had peace. Actually, let me get I think I can actually prove this point better. Joshua. And this was at Mount Sinai itself. And by this time, they had been there for a while there at Mount Sinai, maybe not all that many days. And God said, called Moses up on the mount. And Joshua had, before that, in spite of the fact he was a member of one of the most important families in the tribe of Ephraim, in spite of all that, he willingly became the servant of Moses. And he was following Moses around like a puppy dog does his master, so to speak. Now, maybe that's exaggerating a little bit, but nevertheless, we find Joshua where Moses was, if Joshua could be there. Now, when God called Moses up on the mount, Joshua couldn't go with him. But as Moses went up the side of the mountain, Joshua was there at the bottom, waiting. The day later, he was still waiting, the second, the third, all the way up to the 39th day, to the 40th day. And by this time, the children of Israel were worried, what are we going to do? It's what Moses, he's dead. How are we going to get anywhere? We're just out here in the middle of nowhere. What are we going to do? And somebody comes up with a brain idea because, well, they were used to a golden calf. No, it was gold because they made it out of gold. They decided that they would create a God which would lead them. It doesn't work that way. And that's not God's way. They had heard God say earlier, "Thou shalt have no other gods besides me." And they ignored that. They were going to do it anyway. They didn't believe God. And so they had worked up and got to the place where they decided they were going to have a feast to celebrate this new God that they were going to welcome the God from Egypt. They were going to follow. I don't know how they're going to do that because there wasn't any priests of that particular, of the calves, golden calves there in Egypt. But there wasn't, as far as I know, nobody came with them. Maybe there was. But they decided to have a festival, and they actually took all the clothes off, and they were dancing around naked. And God tells Moses to go back down. He gives him the stones that he had carved out of the side of the mountain and had written with his finger, so to speak, the Ten Commandments on those stones, those two tablets. And so Moses comes back down off the mount. And sure enough, this is after 40 days of being gone, there was Joshua waiting for him. You see, Joshua was at peace with the whole situation. He knew God was going to bring him back down. God called him up. God was going to bring him back down. Joshua was positive. And even later, when they actually got to Kadesh Barnea, and they saw what was in the land. Joshua and Caleb both were two of the 12 spies. And Caleb, to a certain extent, although the Bible does not describe this one way or the other, Caleb probably was at peace too. Because when he went up into the mountains, and when he saw these people, they saw their cities, and how the walls, to them, they described it seeming as if they were into the sky. All the way up to heaven, whatever that expression means. But that's the way it was. They had seen seven nations during that 40-day period of time. They saw seven nations which were stronger than they were. It was obvious that they were stronger. Not only that, but God would later say that he had brought them into the land to displace the people who were there. And he's talking about the seven nations and himself said, stronger and mightier than you. Says it more than once. So you see, but not Caleb. So when the 10 spies came back and they're talking about, oh, how great the land was, but then they started talking about what they saw. But they did not trust God. Joshua and Caleb did. It's obvious by what they said. Because both of them said very emphatically that God would provide them with whatever they needed. God would fight for them. They were well able to do it because of God. Now again, I say, there's a spy, the 10 spies. I told the truth, but they left out God. And you don't want to do that. Not then, not now. Not in life. This is why when we're talking about keeping the laws of God, the parents teaching the children the laws of God, and for them to keep those commandments in the heart, to desire to do the things God says, not to say, well, we don't do that. There are people here who don't do that. Why should we do it? Because it's God's way. God gave them the wisdom that he had. Not all of it, because it couldn't contain it all. But God gave them the wisdom they needed. And that was what they were to do. Follow the wisdom, follow the laws of God, because they were a wise people if they do that. Matter of fact, that is stated in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. That's stated there in more than one place. How wise a nation is who follows their God. How wise. So length of days. Now, what... And Joshua lived to be a ripe old age. I think he lived to be over 100. I don't remember exactly how old he was, but he was an old man. And he was no longer able to do as much as he had earlier. Caleb, we don't know, but we know that he also got special favors. He was given, God promised him there when at Cades Barnea, after the fiasco, after the army of Israel turned their backs upon the Lord their God, the one they had to depend upon for any fighting they did, turned their backs on God and says, we're going back down to Egypt. Now, they had forgotten how horrible that had been. But that's what they had done. That's the way it goes when it comes to people doing things their own way. And everyone died within the next 38 years. And that doesn't mean that they were really young when they died, because some of them, because the army was made up of men from 20 to 50 who were able to go to war. That's how they were picked. And so the ones who were around 20 years of age there at Mount Sinai when that army was numbered, if they were still alive when the plague, when they had run into problems with the children of Israel getting in with the Moabites and visiting their villages and in getting themselves involved in the worship of gods, and getting involved in sex with these people, and following whatever they taught, all these things they were doing, and God sent a plague among them, and many thousands died. And it was right after that that Moses was told by God, number the people again. And when they numbered the people then, the only names that were written down back at Mount Sinai that were still there at this enumeration, this census, was Joshua and Caleb. All the other of the original 603,550 men had died. And again, and what I was beginning to say, trying to say is, even those who were 20 years old, if they lived up to the point when that plague was there at Moab, they were 58, which is not a young age whatsoever. But we find though Caleb and Joshua lived much longer than that. Actually, the oldest one would have been in the 80s. But see, Caleb was 85 when he came to Joshua. This is after the end of the land of Canaan, after 7 years of war. Caleb, at 85, came to Joshua and reminded him of what God had promised about Hebron and the area around it, which were to be Caleb's, because that was God's promise. And Caleb says, I want that land. I mean, these are my words, but you look it up and you'll see that Caleb wants that land. He was just as able as 85 as he had been at 40. 45 years later. That's the difference. Long life. The length of days. He was at peace. Because he believed in his God, and he saw God's salvation throughout all their campaigns. That is how it is. All these things should be added, it says. Now, what's the difference between teaching what is the good and proper way of doing things versus not doing it? Well, let's look at a negative viewpoint. And I've already mentioned the children of Israel, and that's one particular case. I want to go to the book of Judges, second chapter, 10th verse. And then I want to set the context for this. This was, the time was shortly after Joshua had died. Now we go back to verse 7. Actually, I'm going to read down several verses before that. Start at verse 1, chapter 2 of Judges. And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal unto Bochim and said, I made you to go up out of Egypt and have brought you unto the land which I swear unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? See, they were not obeying God as they should. Wherefore I said also, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. Just like the Egyptian god there at Mount Sinai. These gods were going to be a thorn unto them. They were going to follow these things rather than obeying the Lord. They were going to turn their backs upon God. Periodically. And that's what the book of Judges is all about. Time after time after time, people would turn from the Lord and to do what everybody else was doing. And it came to pass when the angel of the Lord spake these words unto the children of Israel, that the people lift up their voice and wept. And they called the name of that place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Lord. And when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went every man to his inheritance to possess the land. And here's the verse I want. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. Now, that's very important. I'll read it again. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua. So, if we go back to the book of Joshua, and I'm not going to go there, per se, but he called the children of Israel and it specifies completely what. Well, maybe I will. No. Anyway, Joshua had called all these people together. And he was admonishing them to serve the Lord God. In doing so, he said this particular sentence. He said, "If it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, then choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of the Amorites in the land where you dwell are the gods of your forefathers on the other side of the flood. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That's actually two sentences. But that's what it says. And the people said, "We will serve the Lord." And he said, "You can't do that." Not a nay. We are going to. As a matter of fact, this verse I just read to you says, they did do that. They did serve the Lord. So you see, that is the context for that verse who is so widely misused, talking about choosing who will serve. There is a choice there, so he said, if it seems evil, then serve whomever. But what really counts is serving God. Not choosing on your own part to say, well, I'm going to serve God. This is talking about God's people. God, people who were serving God. This is the people he was talking to. Not anybody else. Okay. Now. Okay, I'm going to skip a couple verses. Verse 8, Joshua died. 9th verse, they buried him in his inheritance in the Mount of Ephraim. And verse 10, and all that generation were gathered to the fathers, and there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baalim. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked the Lord to anger. Now, this is what is important. Remember I said this is a bad example. As far as serving God, as far as doing what God says, as far as using the wisdom of God to live properly. Somewhere along the line, people have forgotten to teach their children what the Lord does. They have forgotten all this. They didn't talk about it. They didn't, and I will get into all kinds of things which I've got bookmarks in all different places of why they should have been doing these things, how they should be doing it. But you see, it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning, in the first part of both the second chapter and the third chapter of Proverbs. The importance of keeping the commandments of God. The fathers are to teach the children, as Solomon taught his. They are to know what God has done for them. That's important. Now, the other example I won't go to that yet. I will come back to some of these things first. Now, what should they be teaching? Well, let's go to the 6th chapter of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 6th chapter, 1st verse. And by the way, if you're listening to this, if you find, as I mentioned, some of these places, and give you an example, and I start reading. If you, when I mention a particular verse, if you want a little time, you should have a pause button where you can stop the streaming for a little while until you can find the verses I'm talking about, and then you can go from there. There's a context now in the sixth chapter. Because remember, we're talking about the knowledge of God, the wisdom of God. We're talking about learning how to do things properly. Not only in this particular case, well, we'll get into what is there. Now, these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you go to possess it. That thou mightest fear the Lord thy God to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command thee, thou and thy son's sons, all the days of thy life, that thy days may be prolonged. Sound familiar? It will add days. Length of days. Living longer. And that's what it says. This exactly is Solomon wrote. And here comes the great commandment. The greatest commandment in all of the Bible. Hear, O Israel. Hear therefore, O Israel. Oh. Okay. Now I'm going to read it to this next verse that begins this. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it might be well with thee, and that thou may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers has promised thee, in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear therefore and observe it, that it may well be well with thee. You see, when these parents who would not teach their children the things that the Lord had done for them, and there are examples there which we will get into. There are examples of what they were supposed to say about particular things. And when their children asked, what does this mean? They were to tell them. This is a very important part. It tells that the child is supposed to search these things out. It's important that the parents explain the reason why. And it says so in more than one place. But the promise to do, you increase mightily. See, even more so. Why was Caleb so strong at age 85? Because he was following the Lord. He was observing the Lord and the things that the Lord taught and was teaching. It went well with him. And he was a mighty man. You didn't want to mess with Caleb at all. You just really did. But verse 4 and 5. The greatest commandment of all. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. That's it. Love the Lord thy God with all your heart. Really care for the Lord, and it doesn't make any difference to anybody else. Nobody else, nothing matters more than God. Probably not very easy to do. With your heart. And all the soul. Your whole being. And put everything you have into it. That is what is important. And these words which are going down 6. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. See, hide my commandments in your heart. That's first verse, third chapter of Proverbs. Where does Solomon get it? It's right here. But listen what the parents are to do. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. You see, all these things he's telling you that you should be doing, do these things because you love God. Do this with all your might. With your whole soul, your heart, your soul. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thine house and on thine gates. See, some people took that and thought the literal part is how it works. No, you should do that as remind. Yes, well, they were talking about, okay, we'll do this as a reminder, but not with the love. It's supposed to be part of this. When you see these things written on these places, then you should remind you of the love you have for your Lord, for your God. And knowing and seeing that this is something special. This relationship you have with the Lord your God is special. And it shall be when you see, I have to teach these things. And it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of good things which thou fillest not, and wells dig which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, and when thou hast eaten and be full, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Remember the difference between what it is now and what it used to be. You were in bondage. You were in sore bondage. No wonder everybody had problems realizing that something good might come in their life, because it wasn't. As I was talking to someone this evening, the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt, seems like, their attitude seems to be seemed like an excellent example of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Because they were used to, and every time something bad happened, and in life, bad things do happen. That doesn't mean that God doesn't provide to go through those things. When the waters, when you go through the water, they will not overflow thee. You see, God will provide a way. He says so. He does. I can say that after 77 years, I can say, He does that. I wrote a book about a 4-volume set. And the title of it, My Witness, God Provides. That is my witness. God has provided me with so many things that I don't deserve, never did, never will. He did it anyway. Why? Because He loves me. And so I care about Him too. I'll go down to verse 20. And here's the part about teaching. And this is the part about seeking. For the child to seek answers. And here's all the example where the parents are supposed to give it to them. And this is something I find that is not true all too often among the parents today. Just like it wasn't in that generation that knew not the Lord. They didn't make sure they understood God's wisdom and what God desired of them, what God expected of them. They didn't. Okay. I'm just going to hit a couple highlights. 16th verse. Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah. And thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to cast out all thine enemies from before thee as the Lord has spoken. That's what God promised. But you see, I have read in your hearing this night here. I have read to you stating specifically that the angel of the Lord came to the people and told them that they were going to have problems from the people who were living around them, and they were going to be snares unto them because they were not doing what God says. They were told what specifically they were to do, and they didn't do it. And so then he said, why have you done thus? And the promise was to cast them out, but no longer was that kept. Just like the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt, they had all been promised that they were going to the land of Canaan. They all were going to be going to the area which was God's land, so to speak. But you see, because they ignored God, because they would not love Him as they should, because they did not believe, they didn't trust Him, they were not willing to do the things which are good and righteous and proper in God's eyes. And so God says, you're not going in. You're going to die here in the desert, period. Your children, which you thought and which you claimed would be slaves and would be mistreated and their wives would be raped and everything else, whatever you can think of, and you were all going to be slain. That's what you claimed would happen if they had tried to go into the land of Canaan. That's why they want to go back to Egypt, because they didn't see anything but death in front of them. Just point blank. And so they didn't get it. They did not set foot for any extended period of time in the land of Canaan. They just didn't. That's bad. But that's the way it goes. Now, going forward. And like I said, here's where the teaching comes in. Verse 20, Deuteronomy 6. And when thy son asketh thee in time to come. See, this is a case where the son wanted to know. Now, let me finish it first, and we'll get back to that. This is the time to come. This is what the child would be asking. What mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord our God has commanded you? Now, how did the child know that? You see, at least in that particular point, the father, the child knew that there were commandments, there were statutes that they were supposedly to follow. What do these things mean? And he needed to be told. Daughters need to be told too. They need to understand what is involved. See, this is what happened when the children of Israel later, with the whole of them, basically, had gotten to the place where they knew not the Lord. They didn't know what was required of them because they had not heard. They had not heard the precepts. They had not heard the testimony. They had not heard the statutes. They were not written on the door and in various places. They didn't hear these things being spoken by their parents. When they got up, when they went to bed, wherever they went, they taught God. That's what they were to do. This is how they were to show that they loved the Lord. This is what they were to commune with God. They were to enjoy their fellowship with the Lord their God. And they go on to explain, saying, then thou shalt say unto that. So, you see, the child asked, this is what the answer. So, you see, there wasn't a question of what you're supposed to be teaching, because right here is part of it. And when thy son asketh thee in time to come. Okay, I've already read that. 20 verses first. Then thou shalt say unto thy son, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord shewed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household before our eyes. And he brought us out from thence, that he might bring us in to give us the land which he sware unto our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always. Did you hear that at that part? For our good always. This is what doing God's will involves. It's for our good. And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God as he has commanded us. Now, going back to Proverbs 3. Actually, things are running up. Okay, let's take some other examples. Okay, here's a more example of teaching that the parents are to do. This, in the context here, the chapter 12 is talking about the leaving Egypt. And it describes the importance of it. And he's telling them that they are to take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood which they had gotten by bleeding this Paschal lamb. They were to dip it in the blood that's in the basin and strike the lintel and the two side posts. That's the post above the door and the two side posts. When he sees the blood upon the lintels, when God sees the blood on the lintel and the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. This is their protection. The Lord God, the blood, this is what they were instructed to do. And they were to observe this Passover for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass when ye become to the land which the Lord will give you, according to as he promised, that ye shall keep this service. And here's the important part. This is the teaching part. And it shall come to pass when your children say unto you, what mean ye by this service? So you see, they are to keep that service. When they came into the land of Canaan, and this would be many years later, ye are to keep this service every year on the 14th day of the first month of the year. And there were other things to go along with, but we'll talk about at least the Passover part. Okay, here's what the answer should be. What is this? Why? What does this mean? Surely there's a meaning in things, aren't there? There is, and here's what you are to say. It is a sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians, and delivered the houses, and the people bowed the head and worshipped. See, this hasn't happened yet. And when I read this particular chapter, that's why I say you have to be careful and make sure you get the complete context. These are the things which Moses was teaching the children of Israel before the very first Passover. And he said, you are going to be going through this situation, and this is what you're to do. Not only now, but every year hereafter, you are to hold this. This is to be a memorial. You are to do what is right before the Lord our God in remembering what the Lord has done. And you are to teach your children. Remember, that's why it's a little bit, that says there in the 6th chapter of Deuteronomy. They are to teach their children. And this is some of the things that teach them why they need to do these things. And to remember what the Lord had done for them. And then verse 28, finally for this part. And the children of Israel went away and did as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. So did they. So they were doing what God said. They just forgot to teach the children and to make sure, if they lived longer than grandparents, that when the children had children, that the children's children would be taught also. So it would be passed from generation to generation to generation. That's the way it's supposed to be. Let's see, we've got some other examples. It doesn't look too much like. Okay. Joshua chapter 4, verse 6. Now, the context of the situation set up in the situation. This was when Israel was at the Jordan River. And the priest, as commanded by Joshua, which Moses commanded him for them to do this, they were to carry the Ark of the Covenant. They were Levites. Special duty. A particular tribe of Levites. They were to, and the river was out of its banks. Exactly how far on either side we don't know, and it doesn't really matter. But nevertheless, they were walking, and they walked until they were in the water. Maybe ankle deep, I don't know, but. And that is when the Lord cut the water off. He stopped it. He prevented any water from continuing to flow past that point. So it backed up the water, because the water was flowing in there, because it was, like I say, it was flood safe. The water that was coming down had somewhere to go, and so it would go into the tributaries and everywhere else. And it was backing up. But you see, there was a wall of water right there, and then all the rest of the water that had been flowing south continued to drain south until the land was dry. That's the setup. And the people have gone across, all of them, including 45,000 from the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Jordan River, who had their inheritance on the east side. All of those people had crossed over. Now, when everybody was over, then Joshua called these 12 men, which was assigned this duty, to pick up 12 large stones and bring them up off the bank on the Canaan side of the Jordan River. And they were to take another 12 large stones and place them in sort of a pillar at the point where the Ark of the Covenant had been. So they could point to these things. And they were to take the 12 stones that they had carried across the river, you know, out of the riverbank and across the river to the west side. And they were to take those stones from there to Gilgal, which is where they spent the night. And matter of fact, that would be their camp for a period of years. There, they were to set them up. And so, okay. And this is, okay, verse 5. And Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of Jordan, and take ye up every man you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the children of Israel. That this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? So you have those stones at Gilgal. You have those stones there on the east side of the Jordan River. Then you shall answer them, that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it passed over Jordan. The waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. And they did these things. Now, by the time... Now, I'm going to go forward about 45 years. No, I'm going to go forward about 7 years. This is when Caleb came to Joshua. He said, I want this land. He wanted Hebron. God had promised him. But you see, they had basically destroyed much of the people. Not all of them, but many of the children of the various nations had been destroyed. And so they were settling in among them. And at this particular point, after the 7 years of war, that the people, the 45,000 from the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Jordan River, they were permitted to go back home because they had done everything that needed to be done. They had laid down their lives. We don't know how many, if any, were killed during that period of time. It may not be anywhere close to 45,000 men returned. But you had these veterans of war which were sent back home to take care of their land, to develop that land. That's what they were set up to do. That was what was important. And so they did. And then these men who, what was left of the 45,000, became a little bit worried. And that's the fact that what bothered them was the fact that just maybe that the children of Israel on the west side of the bank might say to them, because the Ark of the Covenant was with the people on the west side, they might say, the Jordan River is the border between you and us. You don't have any rights to serve the Lord. You don't have any rights to any of the things that which we do. And so they put a group of stones, and I don't remember saying it's exactly how many, but they put them there. And children of Israel, because it was right there in the same, in the vicinity of these 12 stones, which, you know, one for each tribe. Very close to it. And they saw this pillar, is what it's called in the Bible, of stones. And they thought surely this was these people on the east side had gone to worshiping a god. And so they gathered together. They actually were willing to go and destroy those 2.5 tribes for worshiping God, for worshiping things other than God. And so they sent, first they sent a delegation over, including Phinehas, which was Aaron's grandson. And asked him why. And they were told why. The fact that they feared. And they wanted that monument to be a witness between the children on the east side, the children on the west side of the Jordan River, that the people on the east side had just as much right to serve the Lord their God in the land of Canaan, you know, cross over the Jordan and go to all the work and services and everything else that's involved. They had that right. That's what that was to tell them. This is a witness between the two groups, that the people on the east side had as much right to serve God as those on the west side. That was their concern. And so when Phinehas brings that back to the rest of the 9.5 tribes, everybody's happy. Now, I think this is about as far as we can go, this big point. May the Lord bless you is our prayer.